Good morning, McDermott Road. I love you. Sometimes I tell you that. I tell you that for lots of different reasons, mostly just because I do love you. But sometimes I say it because I really want you to remember that later in the sermon, that I love you. And I really do love you. And I want you to know that today's lesson is tough. We're going to talk about some tough things. But it's not just tough for you, it's tough for me. And I want you to know always, not just this morning, but I want to approach the text not as your teacher, but as a fellow student, as a fellow disciple, that this is just as much, if not more, for me than it is for you. And so all of these things that we're wrestling with, if you hear these things and are convicted, know that I'm convicted with you. And I think this is exactly why James started the book by saying, be quick to hear and slow to speak and slow to become angry. Receive with meekness the implanted word, because he knew that the things that he was going to be telling his audience were going to be tough to hear. Let me ask you this. Have you ever said anything about another person that was just mean? It was cruel. It was hurtful. Maybe you insulted them. Maybe you gossiped about them. Maybe you said something in anger. Maybe you said, I hate you. And I assume that for all of us, the answer is yes to those questions, that we've said things to people that are cruel and hurtful. But then let me ask you this. Have you ever justified that? Have you excused it? Have you said things like, well, you know, I mean, I was just really tired that day. I was really having a bad day. I was really stressed out. I really didn't mean to say that. Or my favorite is, I like this word, I was hangry, you know? Like, and that's the only reason I said that. But in all of those things, what we're saying is, that's not the real me. That's not the real me. That doesn't really reflect who I am. So let me ask you this. What version of you is the real you? If it's not that, what is it? I know we would all like to think that it's this version of ourselves, the Sunday morning version, maybe not the version that just got out of bed or the version that was getting your kids ready to come here, but this version right now, right? This version where we're sitting here, we're singing songs and we're saying prayers and we've got a smile on our face and everything looks fine and good. We'd like to believe this is the real version of us. And we use that to excuse everything else, don't we? We said, that's the real me, and this other me that was angry, that was hurtful, that was rude, that was cruel, that gossiped, that's just the me that when I'm really tired, when I'm really upset, when I'm really stressed out, when I'm hungry. And so that doesn't count. Only this version of me really counts. See, it's that kind of excusing and justifying that the book of James is really cutting through and getting to the heart of. So if you have your Bible, look at James chapter 3 and verse 1 that was just read for us. He says this, not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach, and he's putting himself in that same category, we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. Now that might seem like a really strange thing for a Christian to say, especially for a preacher to say, not many of you should become teachers? Like, aren't we all supposed to be teachers? Aren't we supposed to be teaching other people? I don't think it's so much the act of teaching that he's talking about. He's talking about the role of being teachers. Because both in the first century and even today, there is sort of an honor and respect that goes along with being in that role of teacher, isn't there? And he's saying, some of you are so ambitious running after that, and you want to be seen as teachers. You want the role of teacher because you want the honor and respect that goes with it. You're looking for the respect and the honor of other people when you need to know that it's not their opinion that really matters. It's God's opinion that really matters. And if you step into that role, you're going to be held to a higher standard, not by people necessarily, but by God. And you're going to be judged with a greater strictness. And here we get to the heart of it. Verse 2, he says, for we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone doesn't stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man able to bridle his whole body. Now, obviously, James is not, as he's often accused, of promoting some sort of legalism or like works salvation. He's not promoting perfectionism. He's saying we all stumble in many ways. What James is promoting is honesty and consistency and faithfulness and loyalty, allegiance to King Jesus that's more than just surface level, that's not one thing one day and another thing another day. He's saying to these people that he's writing to, he's saying, if your words really are as trustworthy and as wise as you would like people to believe that they are, then you would be perfect. You wouldn't stumble in any way, because the tongue, the mouth, is the hardest part of the body to control, isn't it? Verse 3, he says, if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. I think every single one of us here could say that our lives, at one point or another, our lives have been set on fire by someone's words, haven't they? Something that someone said to you set your world on fire. Something that someone said about you, maybe behind your back, set your world on fire. And chances are something you said about someone else set your world on fire. The tongue relative to its size, the mouth relative to its size, has unbelievable impact, doesn't it? This tiny little part of the body can set a whole world on fire. It has all kinds of positive power, doesn't it? I mean, you can do a lot of good things with your words. You can build people up. You can encourage people. You can say nice things. But that's not exactly what James is talking about here. He's talking about the negative power of our words. And he says specifically that this tiny little part of the body boasts of great things. Specifically for religious people, it boasts of how religious the person is, how pious they are, how wise they are, how much faith they have, how they would make such a great teacher. And he's saying, your mouth is so small, but yet it's boasting of such great things. And in spite of all of that talk, he says, verse 6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being, listen to this, no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. That sentence has always bothered me. Like, I mean, in the middle of James saying, hey, watch your mouth, people. Watch your mouth. Stop talking like that. In the middle of that, he says, no one can tame the tongue. And I want to be like, well, then what's the point? Why bother? Why try? What are you even trying to get at, James? If we can't do this, then why are you scolding us for talking out of both sides of our mouth? A quote from Augustine really, really helped me here. He said this, James doesn't say that none can tame the tongue, but no man can tame the tongue, in order that when it is tamed, we may acknowledge it to be affected by the mercy of God, the help of God, the grace of God. The soul, therefore, should endeavor to tame the tongue, and while endeavoring, should pray for assistance. The tongue, too, should beg for the taming of the tongue. In other words, the tongue can be tamed, but not by you, not by me. I can't tame my own tongue, but God can. The tongue can be tamed. It's everything we've been talking about in our class on Sunday mornings, isn't it? only through the power of the Holy Spirit who dwells within you. The Spirit of God can empower you to tame your tongue, but you can't tame your own tongue. It is only the wisdom from above. James will talk about that later here in this chapter. And when you receive that wisdom from above, then your words will be pure and peaceable and gentle and open to reason and full of mercy and full of good fruits and impartial and sincere. That's what a tamed tongue sounds like. But you can't do it. Again, he's talking to people like me and you who often think that we're better than we really are, who fool ourselves into thinking that we're wiser than we really are. We fool ourselves into thinking that we're more religious than we actually are, fool ourselves into thinking that we're more spiritual than we really are. And he's saying, if your words really were as good and as trustworthy as you say they are, you'd be able to control your whole self. You'd be perfect. But nobody can do what you're claiming you have done. And the proof of that is the way that you use your words. Because here's what we do. When the Spirit of God is not living in us, and we're not walking by the Spirit, and instead we're trying to just be strong enough and good enough and smart enough and wise enough and religious enough on our own, here's what we end up doing. Verse 9, he says, with this tongue of ours, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. I told you, this is where it gets tough, church. Because we've been singing all morning, haven't we? About how much we love God and how much we adore Him and how awesome He is and how committed we are to Him. And James says, this is what happens when you don't have wisdom from above. You use this mouth of yours to bless God, and the same mouth, you use it to curse people, to wish evil on people, to wish ill of people who are made in the likeness of God, who are more like God than you could possibly imagine. And who is that true of? Every human being. Every human being is more like God than you even realize. And how inappropriate it is for us to use the same mouth to bless God and then the same mouth to curse the people who are made in God's likeness. This happens all the time, doesn't it? We might not just say from the same mouth, we might say on the same Facebook page, come both blessings and cursing. We might say on the same bumper, we see stickers both blessing God and cursing people who are made in His likeness. You've seen it, haven't you? We've been guilty of it, haven't we? He isn't saying this to say, well, some people out there, some people are guilty of this. He's saying, you've all done this. Recognize this and stop fooling yourself into thinking that you're something that you're not. But church, I want to get really specific here. The people who annoy you, irritate you, the people who insult you, the people who are legitimately your enemies, they are all made in the likeness of your God. The people who cut you off in traffic are made in the likeness of God. The people who speak a different language than you are made in the likeness of God. The people who vote differently than you are made in the likeness of God. If you're tempted to make assumptions about people because of the color of their skin, you need to know that they are made in the likeness of God. You also need to understand that if people have made assumptions about you because of the color of your skin, they also are made in the likeness of God. Jewish people are made in the likeness of God. Muslim people are made in the likeness of God. Hindu people are made in the likeness of God. LGBTQ+ people are made in the likeness of God. That doesn't mean you have to agree with everyone, but it does mean you curse no one. You speak evil of no one. You wish evil on no one. You legitimately and genuinely want the best for every human being because they are made in the likeness and the image of the God that you adore. Listen to what he says, James chapter 3 and verse 10. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. Do you see what he's saying? You don't get to dismiss your angry words. You don't get to dismiss your hangry words and say, well, those don't really represent me. That's not the real me. If a vine produces grapes, what kind of vine is it? What kind? A grapevine. If a tree produces figs, what kind of tree is it? A fig tree. If a tree produces olives, what kind of tree is it? An olive tree. You don't get to say, well, that doesn't really represent me. They were justifying themselves. They were excusing themselves. They were saying, that's not really the real me. I know I say those kind of things. I know those kind of words come out of my mouth. And James is saying, whatever your mouth produces is coming from somewhere. And you have to stop fooling yourself into thinking that you're something that you're not. You have to stop fooling yourself into thinking that you're wiser than you really are or more religious than you really are. Stop fooling yourselves. Verse 13, he says, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. See, that's what this is all about, isn't it? We need to recognize who we are and also recognize how susceptible we are to deceiving ourselves. We're constantly, and rightfully so, guarding ourselves against other people lying to us. We're skeptical about what other people tell us. Good. Good. People do lie to you, and you shouldn't be deceived by them. But you know who else lies to you? You do. I do. I lie to myself. You lie to yourself. And he says that we are boasting and being false to the truth. Unless we really do have this kind of fruitful, meek kind of wisdom. James loves the word meek. This word that means that you have like a gentle disposition. You're humble. You take the log out of your eye before you go around trying to take the speck out of other people's eye. See, that's exactly what James is dealing with. Same thing his brother Jesus dealt with. Like religious people, we have this tendency, don't we? To boast about ourselves and to judge other people and to go around trying to take the speck out of everybody else's eye. And maybe they do have a speck in their eye and maybe it does need to come out. But we need to be honest about the plank that's sticking out of our face, don't we? And he says, you've got some things you need to deal with. And if you really are as wise as you think you are, then you need to show it in the meekness of wisdom. He says, verse 15, this is not the wisdom that comes down from above. This kind of wisdom is, let's go back to verse 13. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts. That's the kind of wisdom, he says, verse 15, is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual. This is a tough one, isn't it? Demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. You know, as a Christian, we often talk about persecution and like people not understanding you because of your faith and people saying all kinds of horrible things about you because you're following Jesus. I mean, honestly, I haven't dealt with very much of that from the unbelieving world. Most of the horrible things that have ever been said about me have sadly come from other followers of Jesus. And maybe that's true for you as well. In fact, maybe we have been the ones guilty of that, of saying those kinds of things about other believers, about anyone. See, even if our language is covered in a religious veneer, if it's jealous and selfishly ambitious, if it's angry and hostile and cruel, James says that kind of quote-unquote wisdom isn't the kind of wisdom that comes from above. It's earthly. It's unspiritual. It's demonic. This sort of talking out of both sides of our mouth where we say all kinds of wonderful things about God and all kinds of horrible things about one another, he says, is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Verse 17, he says, but the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make, what, church? Peace. Now notice he says it comes down from above. That's really what we need to get through our minds, isn't it? That this kind of wisdom doesn't come from inside of you. It doesn't come from simply trying harder and working more at it. This is what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 7. Like, when we just try in the flesh to be better and to follow the rules and to not do the bad things and to do the good things, we end up doing the things we don't want to do and not doing the good things we want to do. The only one who can deliver us from this body of death, this body of sin, is Jesus and the Spirit that he gives us. And the Spirit who comes down from above and indwells us and empowers us, he is the one who can begin to transform us. And when he is living in us and we're walking in the Spirit, then our life can be filled with what Paul says in Galatians 5, it's the Spirit's fruit, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness. James's list here sounds very similar, doesn't it? This is what wisdom from above really looks like. And he said in the first chapter, if you lack this kind of wisdom, what do? Ask God. Ask God. He gives generously to everyone who asks him in faith. Trust him that he's the one that can tame our tongue. This is what God's wisdom looks like and sounds like. Now notice, he says righteousness. Righteousness, which is what? Right relationship with people and right relationship with God, and peacemaking go hand in hand. Righteousness and peacemaking go hand in hand. In other words, you can't have a right relationship with God. You can't be in a right relationship with God while actively being hostile and antagonistic and angry and argumentative with the people around you. The only way to cultivate an environment of righteousness is by being peacemakers. So James is really trying to help them to understand that saying you're religious and saying you have faith and saying you have wisdom and saying you're a teacher and that people should honor you and respect you and listen to you, you really need to check yourself. And what's inside? And where are your words coming from? And so we might put it this way, that the test of your relationship with God is not just how you talk about him, but how you talk about the people you don't like. It's not just how you talk about God, and it's not just about how you talk about the people that you like. As Jesus would say, everybody could love people that love them. Like, that's easy. That's not a reflection of your relationship with God. Everybody does that. Everybody speaks well of the people who speak well of them. Everybody likes the people who like them back. Everyone who loves those who love them. The real test of your relationship with God, of whether or not you look like your father, is whether or not you love your enemies, is how you speak about the people that you don't agree with and you don't like them very much. You don't enjoy them very much. They haven't been very nice to you. How we speak about those people is a good test of our relationship with God. Now notice, James is not saying this is how you earn your salvation. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying you become a Christian or you are in a right relationship with God by earning your way there, by speaking well of people. But he is saying that the words that come out of your mouth is part of the fruit that the Spirit is producing in your life. And if you are walking by the Spirit, if you are keeping in step with the Spirit, if you are filled with the Spirit, you will have wisdom from above. And this is what wisdom from above looks like. It looks like it's pure, it's peaceable, it's open to reason. In other words, it can be reasoned with. It's gentle. It's full of mercy. It's full of good fruit. It's impartial and sincere. That's the way our language will be and our actions will be when the Spirit of God is living inside of us. James, all throughout this letter, is trying to get people to realize and recognize where they are deceiving themselves, where they're fooling themselves. And so I need to be honest as I read this text, don't you? And I need to ask myself, Wes, where are you fooling yourself? Where are you deceiving yourself? Have we tricked ourselves into thinking that we have more faith than we really do? That we're more religious than we actually are? That we are in a right relationship with God? While we actively praise God with the same mouth with which we curse others? If we do that and we excuse it and we justify it, we're fooling ourselves. And again, there's no way that we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. James isn't just saying, try harder, work harder at being the person you're supposed to be. He's saying the only way to be that person is through wisdom from above. And the only way to get that wisdom is to submit yourself to him, is to meekly receive the implanted word which is able to save your soul and ask God for that wisdom. To say to God, God, I've messed up. I've blessed you with the same mouth I used to curse my neighbor. And Father, that doesn't reflect the kind of wisdom that comes from you. Forgive me and give me that kind of wisdom. That heart, that humility, that meekness, that receiving, that transformation, it starts at baptism. And maybe there's somebody here and you're tired of trying to be good enough on your own. You're tired of trying to earn and merit salvation and this kind of wise living. And you're ready to surrender yourself to the mercy and the grace of God to receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your soul. Or maybe you made that commitment a long time ago, but James is beginning to convict you that you've been walking in wisdom that is earthly and unspiritual and demonic, and you need to recommit yourself to the Lord and receive wisdom from above so that your life and your words can reflect purity and peacemaking and gentleness, just like the one we say we follow. Or maybe this morning, maybe your life has just been turned upside down. Maybe your world has been set on fire by the words of somebody else. Maybe you're dealing with the reality of living in a broken and sinful world, and you just need the love and the compassion and the prayers of your brothers and sisters. We would love to show you that. We would love to show you the wisdom that doesn't come from us, the wisdom that comes from above. We would love to love you and encourage you and pray for you. Our shepherds would love to do that in the prayer room in the back, or you can come forward now. As together we stand, sing this song.